We're off our base.
We didn't get submission. You're right. Okay, we're up to Rabbi Tavi. I mean, the man off our base up to Rabbi Tavi. Rabbi Tavi Shariyeshu said, time of Rabbi Chinah. Rabbi Chinah said, they had a machlokes Rabbi Chinah and Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Chinah held that, we're talking about a case where there were two daughters and one son. And the first daughter to get married got a tenth of the property off the top. And the second daughter, then the son died. So anyway, the two, they're going to inherit whatever property there is. So when the second daughter gets married, she says, well, I guess you'll get 10% off the top because I didn't get my 10% portion. Or since they're dividing up whatever's left anyway equally, so she doesn't get an additional 10%. Because the whole purpose of the 10% was to give her something with which to get married. And since she has now anyway half of the entire remaining property, it's no point in giving her a tenth. So that's the machlokas. Rabbi Chinah says she gets a tenth off the top before they split up the property. Rabbi Yochanan says she doesn't get a tenth off the top because she's getting enough property to marry herself off with. So Rabbi Tavi Shemri Yeshu said, time Rabbi Chinah said she gets a tenth off the top. The tenth with a girl, an orphan girl, gets in order to marry herself off is such a powerful concept that the rabbis made that it takes from the chasim mishubadim. In other words, all a person's property is under lien for that. Even if he sold off property during his lifetime after his death, that property is redeemed in order to go to Isur Nechasim, right? In order to go to that extra tenth. So too, actually, I don't know if it's property he sold off, but property that his son sold off after the death. That means that if the son who inherited the property sold stuff off and there wasn't a freeze in the chasim, so we take it from property which is sold. So lokoshke mashal afaneh, so you take from property which is sold off, you certainly take from property which is still there. Rabbi Yochanan, however, gadaiti. Rabbi Yochanan was like his opinion. Demar Rabbi Zira. Rabbi Zira said, Rabbi Yochanan lo gavi. Rabbi Yochanan taka did not allow her to collect for her Isur Nechasim from the Chasim Mishubadim, from stuff which was already sold off by the son. Man Gavi, who does collect from the Chasim Mishubadim, Rabbi Chanina, and the Carbonator brings out a Girsa, Rabbi and Rabbi Elah as well, Gavi. They both collected from the Chasim Mishubadim, from property which they sold off. Rabbi Yasi, Yispakit Gabe, Riyas is given for safekeeping, Medo, movable property, the Yasmin of orphans. Favatam and Yasmain, and these orphans who were boys had sisters who were also orphanesses. Bain Mefarna saw, and they needed to get their tenth. So the Shilas, does the tenth come just from land, from real estate, or does it also come from this metalflin, from the movable objects which Rabbi Yasa was holding? And therefore, since he was the guardian of that, would he have to release a tenth of that property in order to marry them off, just from real estate, not from what he's holding, right? So it says, Mar Oil of the Kumi Rabbi Lezer, Rakumi Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochim. He took this matter in front of Rabbi Lezer, in front of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochim. Amar Rabbi Shimon Yochim, Rabbi Shimon Yochim says, logical, it was to take from this these movable goods, from these metalflin, for the Isimun Nechosim. Why? Because lo mutav shenisparsim shalavim, is not better they should be sustained from their father. In other words, this is their father's property. If you don't give them this, and obviously the father had no real estate, so they're not going to have anything. They have to go get stoka. So logically, it's better to give them metalflin than lo minat stoka, not from stoka. So says the Gemara. Humberly Rabbi Lezer said, that's a nice far, but Dabar She'ilu Yovel Ifnei Rabbi Seinu, something which were, this question, which were to come before our Rabbeim, Vein Rabbi Seinu Nogim, they don't know what to paskin about it. They're not sure if Isur Nechasim, this tenth, comes from metalklin or only from real estate. Vano Osimus Amaisa, we're going to do a deed to issue psak in this matter. How can we be so bold? Rabbi Yosir, everybody said, nevertheless, honor Yehivlot, I'm giving the orphanesses, the daughters, I'm giving them a tenth out of the metalflim I'm holding. Become with Yasmiv Arun, if the boys get up and protest, I know Yehivlot, I'll give them back out of my own pocket. Says the Mara, Afilu Cain, nevertheless, all's well that ends well. Chamud, the boys saw what he was doing, Velo Irun, they did not complain. So he didn't have to make any restitution. Everybody lived happily ever after. Rabbi Zira Boykum Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Zira asked in front of Rabbi Yossi, Hey Chavdin Uvda, what do we do? Lamais in the Machlokas Rabbi Yochum Reichina. Does the second daughter get married, take 10% off the top before they split up the property, or does she not get 10% off the top? I'm like Rabbi Chanina, we pass on like Rabbi Chanina. Chenafik Utuk Rabbi Chinan. So do the episodes have occurred like Rabbi Chinan. Rabbi Avum Hashem Rabbi Hila argues. He says, Roinas and the Chosik Hilu Charevin. We see the property as if it's destroyed, meaning we do not take it into, once the brother who had control of the property died, it's as if the all bets are off concerning this property and divided them equally, and there is no additional 10% off the top to go to the daughter who is yet to get married. It's interesting, the Ramah brings down that the Yerushalmi passes like Rabbi Chanina, and the Gro actually says we should pass like Rabbi Chanina, despite the fact that here it seems Rabbi Hila argues, but I guess it's said the line before, Venofik Uvda. Rabbi Chanina, that it came out that people did like Rabbi Chanina, that the second girl also got 10% before the divided up the property, so that's what's the way it seems we pass in Aloch Lamaisa. Okay? Hamashish Mosabito, somebody who set aside, who gave to a third party, an agent, money to hold for his daughter. V'yomer, she says, Nemun alai bali, you know what, I trust my husband. Yeah, said, and basically what she's saying is, instead of this guy, the agent, holding in trust for her, she'd rather her husband gets the money. So, nonetheless, Yasser Shlish Mashush Lishbiyado. The agent should do what he was told to do, in other words, not give the money to the husband. He should keep the money, and I guess, you know, keep it to whatever date, or dispense it gradually over time, whatever the terms of the trust agreement were that he undertook for.
So is this considered a dowry? Or
No. On the contrary.
Giving it to the husband so it could be mixed, it could be mistaken.
Well, that's exactly what Rabbi Meir says not to, right? Let's say it's a field. It's like any other field. And she wanted to sell it. So she can sell it to somebody else, right? So therefore, if she wants, she can dispose this property. It's not a blind trust. She can dispose this property as she wants, right? So therefore, why not allow to give the husband, right? My medvar amuri, now when is this true? Bigdoila, by an adult woman, so she could sell it on her own, so discretion, so therefore we could give it to her husband as well, if that's what she came at. I'm a biktana, but if she's a minor, ain my biktana klun, then of course it doesn't apply, because biktana does not have the discretion to sell the field, right? Masnisa says, Amar Masnisa, but possibly the erusin. Or the way the Shari Teretz Yisrael changed it, Bo Meres, which is a little bit better. We can make do with the Girsa here, but we'll do with the Shari Teretz Yisrael. It's where she said to give the property to her husband when she was only betrothed. Then it's Machlokes Ramei and Rabbi Yossi. Avalim Omeres. Okay, again, if she says, Minan Nisuin, to give it to her husband, then Af Rabbi Meir Modeh, Rabbi Meir also concedes. Because after the nisuin, of course, it's considered to be her husband's already, because whatever a wife gets after the nisuin belongs to her husband. Okay? Hishlish min nisuin himachlokas. However, what if the husband's, the father specifically appointed this trusted agent, this trustee, after the nisuin? So that's a machlokas, our main Rabbi Yossi. Because in that case, our main, the father obviously intended to give it to his daughter and keep it away from the husband, which person allowed to do? A person allowed to be makdas only to a woman on the condition that her husband has no authority over it. So that's the case. So says the mayor, the trustee should not give it to the husband, keep it for himself, or, you know, dispense it according to whatever terms were given to him. According to Rabbi Yossi, since she has the right to give it to her husband, so therefore she directs to give it to her husband, we give it to the husband.
We're talking about a gedola here.
Right, a gedola is nesua. Right. Okay? After the sword. Homer to there's a case, a very famous case that appears in the Bible a couple of times. Homer to Nu Levonai Shekel B'Shabbos. The guy says, give it to my kids. Story about after his death. He says, give it to my kids, let's say it's called $10 a week. Family sell, but they need $20 a week. Nurse them sell it. So we give them $20. We say the father made a mistake, he wasn't being accurate. Out the Nulem Elishek, however, he said, only give them $10. No Slim Shekel, you only give them $10. Now, that's only by his children, but Lemosin Ishiva Bonos. But in terms of the sustenance of his wife and daughters, which is a Tanai Ksuva, Ben Chomar, Tunu Ben Chomar, Alti Tunu, whether he said, give them $10 a week, or he said, only give them $10, don't give them more than $10 a week. No Slim, we give them the complaint Moshe corrects is Sela. We give them the whatever they need because it's a Tanai Ksuva. You can't opt out of it by making a statement. It's a Tanai Ksuva that they should get fully sustained. So if their sustenance is more than the $10, so he's got to give whatever his estate is, give whatever it is, the $20. Tana Rishon Gamliel Omer. Rishon Gamliel says, Meir Hoya Omer. Meir used to say, I guess, Rabbi Meir used to say, Omer Tzenula Bonai Shekel B'Shabbos. Somebody says, give to my kids $10 a week. They're willing to sell out, and they're suitable to get $10, $20. No Salem Shekel. So we don't give $20. Not like we just said. We only give them $10. The rest, let them go, you know, get a green card and collect stalker. Not true. They get as much as they need to sustain themselves from the property as long as the property is there. Only after that do they get stalker. Rabbi Yosef Rebbe said, this question was resolved by Chilfe, who's Ilfa. It's a famous case of Ilfa. It's brought down the Bavli as well. Amre, he said, should be the Amar, but the same idea. Amre, Esun al Gif Nara, I'm going to sit on the, either it's the slope of the river, or in the Bavli, it means on the mast of a ship over the river. And I told, it took an oath. The Lafikis Misnaye, that if somebody's quavo poses me a question, that I would not be able to bring out Misnayet Rabbi Chia. Second night in a row. Did you stop by our house for a tea again?
No, I got tied up on the line. I'm trying to order some books and I couldn't get through.
It's the whole system. Oh boy. I'm going to have to give you 40 lashes. So he says, Amre is again other pastor shelter that Yilfe Amre he said Aistel gave now gonna sit over the river. If I cannot deduce the source of any brisa which Rabbi Chia said in the brisas, because of course Rabbi Chia arranged the brisas, min mas nisa from a Mishnah, then it should be either kuni lenara, let them throw me in a river. It's a famous statement Ilfa made because Rabbi Yochanan went out to work because they were impoverished, and Rabbi Yochanan heard a Basco say go back, and he went back and became Rosh Hashiva, and Ilfa went and he continued working and he came back and they made fun of him. They said, yeah, you could have stayed, you could have become Rosh Hashiva, right? Little did they know that he could have supported the whole yeshiva on his own. Anyway, so he said, he proved to them that he was learning the whole time. He said he had a special sheet of learning in which he found every brisa had an allusion in the Mishnah. Okay, if they told him any brisa, he could find an allusion to it in the Mishnah. Because, of course, the principle of the Mishnah is that the Mishnah is called Torah Kula, that all Torah Baal Peh has its roots in the Mishnah. And Ilfa studied that to know how that worked. So he's called the Ben Yushami Chilfe, of course, that's the same name. So in any event, he says here, so they asked him about this brisa, that the brisa which says that Tznu Shekel Lebonai, right, give $10 a week to my kid, and it says certain circumstances you give them still $20 a week if they deserve 20, certain circumstances you give 10, because he said 10. So they asked him, where's this price alluded to in the Mishnah? So he said, Mava Meimar, what did he tell them? Yaseh Shlish Mashahushal Shpil, it's alluded to in our Mishnah, that sometimes we tell a trustee, even though the woman, it makes sense in what she's saying, but nonetheless, the guy who set up the trust fund told you to file to give it to the told the trustee to do a certain thing, so the trustee continues to do that, despite the fact it would make sense the other way. Okay? So our Mishnah is the source for that price. Now, Meis Yerushua Acherim, and this is a little bit chosim in a sefer, a little bit missing here from the book. It says in that brisa over there by the kids, if a guy says Tznu Shekel Banai, give $10 a week to my kids, even though they're supposed to get 20, they really need $20 if their budget is to be proper. But if there are other people there who are going to inherit after the sons, there are other heirs in line. So we say the father specifically meant $10 a week in order to leave Yerusha to whoever else is going to get it afterwards. So therefore, we cannot give them more than $10 a week. Right? Let's talk about there are other people who might potentially inherit afterwards. Okay? So says the Gemara, Mace, therefore, if the brother dies, then Yerusha Acherim, other people will inherit. Now, says the Gemara, I made that braisa wrong. I said it wrong. It's not if there are other people who are suitable to inherit them, but rather it means if there, he said when he made the specification, says, give a shekel a week to my sons, and whatever remainder is left over, I want to be inherited by so-and-so. You know, I don't know how long he made the stipulation for, or 10 years, whatever it was, but afterwards I want whatever's left to be inherited by so-and-so. So then, in that case, we can't have to give them more than $10 a week, because we'll be diminishing the inheritance granted to so-and-so. Now, the question the Gemara has is, obviously, how can he say so-and-so will inherit? Who are his true heirs? His sons, right? So you can't say so-and-so will inherit if you have heirs which are your sons, like Masna Mashakosa Batura. It's making condition against that which the Torah says, right? So it says Gemara, and that's the question. Lo chen amar Rabbi Avo b'shem Yochanan ni Rabbi Yosef ni Rabbi Yochanan kol shonos odem mizaka, with any language a person gave a gift chutz milosh Yerusha, except for the language of Yerusha, it doesn't work. So how can it work over here? So it says Gemara a couple of answers. First answer Gemara says leis kani yarsun. He didn't say that after my son's time is over the other guy should inherit. That's right, that won't work. Eli yitlun, he should get it as a gift. Okay, that's one answer. Rabbi Zira boikum Rabbi Mana. Rabbi Zira said in front of Rabbi Mana, Kan be matana ispaugun. Ispaugun. He said here we're talking not about Yerusha but a gift. Why is that? Because of the following statement. Let's say you wrote a document which you're writing all your property to two different people. Kachas, in other words, 50-50, I guess, or whatever breakup it is, it's not material, but you're writing all your property as a gift to two people, right? What if in the document you wrote to one a language of a gift, which is the proper language, and the other one you wrote a language of inheritance, which is improper language, because these people are not suitable to inherit you, obviously. So, do we divide it in half? Do we say both work? Do we say both don't work? So I'm Rabbi Lezmi Kamech Zacha Bo Beloshin Matana, since one, it's like a Migo. Since one of half of the document was written in language of Matana, that works. So therefore, the other half, which is written in the language of Yerusha, works it well as well. Okay? So I'm Rabbi Yochanan says, Nirin Dvarim. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, it seems to me, Beloshin Matana Zacha, Beloshin Yerusha Lo Zacha. He was written to him in a language of a gift, since that's workable, he gets his part. The one who was written to in a language of inheritance, since that's not workable, he doesn't get his part, right? But in any event, Rabbi Zira wanted to say that maybe over here the issue is that even though he said, let my sons get, and then he says that whatever's left over should be inherited by somebody else, but since for his sons he said tnu of Lashon Matzona, maybe that language works to extend, like Rabbi Lezer says, to the other part of the document, even that which is written in the language of Yerusha.
It's not Rabbi Matzona to the sons, it is Yerusha.
Yeah, but so still...
The language is wrong. The act is correct, but the language is wrong.
You're saying good, but nevertheless, even though it would work, because technically speaking, the word tnu means Matzona. Even though you're right, it should have been Yerusha kids. Doesn't matter, but the language of Tanu is a Matana. The truth is, I could answer you differently. I could answer you perhaps better. I could say that even though it's not, his sons don't need a Matana, but obviously if he's adjusting it as an allowance, that allowance is really a gift. It's not the Yerusha. Because the definition of giving an allowance to his children after his death indicates that they didn't fully inherit the property yet. Rather, somehow the estate is still extant and they're getting it in a trickle. So that's really a Matana type transaction.
Well, you could say that the whole estate is an escrow, and it's
okay.
It's being portioned off on a weekly basis. So it's not really a gift. It's just giving the part of the Yerusha part of an escrow.
Okay, so maybe it's just because of linguistics. Maybe it's just a technicality. So Amrei Pinchas Asu Uvdin Koy Rabbi Yirmiya, and this story came from Rabbi Yirmiya. And he said, he came in the, in other words, Rabbi Zira's proposal that they'd be saying it's going like we're Rabbi Lezer. He said, he came to Rabbi Lezer, Mar Ufan. Rabbi Lezer said that he has a definite tradition that, or a definite, he taught in a definite way that as long as one part of the star says Matana, that suffices for the entire star. Rabbi Yelamar Nirin, Rabbi Yelamar says it seems to him that the entire the star has to be written in language of Matana, otherwise the only part which works is the part written in language of Matana. Halachic Rabbi Lezer, so it seems to him, halachic like Rabbi Lezer, meaning that the language of Matana spreads the entire star. Amar Shmuel, Shmuel said, that's all very nice, but Lo Rabbi Meir Amara, didn't Rabbi Meir, I have a better riot to Paskin, I should say, like Rabbi Lezer, because it seems that Rabbi Meir said like Rabbi Lezer. As Meir said, like we just said, when you say, give to my kids and let somebody else inherit what's left, that both transaction work. So that's explicit riot like Rabbi Lezer, because otherwise, why, how could Rabbi Meir Paskin that language you just said, but that language of Yusha works, it's not the proper language. If it works, it must be because we pass on like Rabbi Lezer, that Rabbi Meir obviously passed on like Rabbi Lezer, that the legitimate language spreads over the star to the other part as well. Okay? Ve'eno Niros Shema Klumu. And these, it's a hard line to translate, so I'm not clear exactly what it means. This thing which Rabbi Yochanan says, that Nira, right? Rabbi Yochanan says, what was the language? Nirin Dvarim, right? That he wanted to say the dichotomy. So this Nirim or not Nirim, do you think it's significant? Rabbi Meir says it, and that's sufficient by like Rabbi Lezer. Even the word Einon is funny. We're saying that Rabbi Yochanan said Nirin, right? So the Ein should say Nirin Shema Klumi. You think the fact that Rabbi Yochanan says, well, it seems to him makes a difference if Rabbi Meir explicitly goes with Rabbi Lezer. I'm not sure how the Einon works in, right? Because Rabbi Meir didn't say Einon Nirin, Rabbi Meir said Nirin. So it's saying like, you know, I can gloss over it, I can erase it, I'm not sure exactly how to read the line, but the bottom line is that Rabbi Yochanan said, well, it seems to him that they divided the document in half, and that which it says Matzah works, that which says Yerusha doesn't work, and the one is saying, your nearing is nothing, because we see Rabbi Meir clearly holds that you don't draw a distinction, as long as part of the document is okay, the entire document is okay as well. Says Gemara, wait a minute. I have a I have a Mishnah which goes like Rabbi Yochanan. Oh no, sorry. No, well, almost made a big mistake. And I bring you proof that I don't pass Rabbi Yochanan as a Mishnah against him. That's about to bring proof that we don't pass it. I can't even see him. Hiding back there. I bring you proof that you don't pass me. Can't let you fall asleep. It says, I read the article about sleep deprivation.
Interesting.
And it's very depressing. There's an article in Science Times today about sleep deprivation. Not supposed to get less than that. Extraordinary amount of sleep every night. I forget exactly what it is, but some obscene number, yeah, like 8 to 9 hours. All right.
Some obscene. It's fantasy.
Yeah. Okay, I don't know how.
Otherwise, you can get fat. Never happened,
right? I remember reading as a kid that Jock Plant used to sleep 12 hours before a game.
Really?
Before he used to play. I can't imagine how anybody sleeps 12 hours straight. Anymore.
Like some of the greatest Gadola got by.
They never slept. Yeah. So the article is seen that there's some people who are beyond the norm, but don't need as much sleep as others. All right. In any event, located in Rabbi Yassin, at precedent that wherever there's a mission against Rabbi Yochanan, no possible like Rabbi Yochanan. Where's such a case? I'll give you a case. Located in Rabbi Yassin, B'shem Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yassin said name Rabbi Yochanan. Semra B'chor Shetorfo. It's an interesting case. Yeah, a B'chor, of course, is a firstborn animal. It's Kadosh. And if it's a lamb, its wool is Kadosh. You're not allowed to use the wool. So let's say somebody illicitly sheared the wool and Shetorfo and mixed it into other wool. Batal Barof. It's Batal. Right, you can use the wool. Vayzer Rabbi Chiya Tzipora Yikomi Rabbi Ami. So Rabbi Chiya Tzipora, he brought in front of Ami. Litra B'shmoina. He brought in front of him a measure of wool for $8. I don't know if that was expensive, cheap, but name. And the point is, it had B'chor wool mixed in. But he figured Rabbi Yochanan pass it's okay, so it would be, it's okay, right? V'lo horele. But he wouldn't pass him, Rabbi Ami would not pass him leheter. The Ma Rabbi Asa, because Rabbi Asa said, although Rabbi Yochanan said Tzmutulamas, he says it's not a Mishnah. If somebody weaves a sit, which is like a between the thumb and the forefinger, full of between mitzemra b'chor from the wool of a b'chor b'beged in a garment, idolik habeged, the dark garment that's be burnt. Miser Nazir, if he puts the same amount of the hair of a Nazir, we pet the chamor, or the hair of a firstborn donkey, which not be redeemed, besak, in cashmere, idolek a sack. You got to burn the sack, right? So here we see quite clearly not like Rabbi Yochanan, right? Isn't that not clear? So we've done Paschal like Rabbi Yochanan. Now, what Rabbi Yochanan, there the Gemara is obviously doesn't deal with it, the Gemara here obviously doesn't deal with it, but unfortunately, what tack does Rabbi Yochanan hold? What Rabbi Yochanan do with this mission? Seems to be an exclusive mission against him. Mela and our Mishnah over here, where it says that, he said to his sons, Matana, and to the other guy, Yerusha. And Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara says, Rabbi Meir says, well, it works, right? So here, maybe there's some reason Rabbi Yochanan holds that that's not the same case as his case, where he said if it's the same document, then one says Matan, one says Yerusha, doesn't work. I don't know, maybe he has some distinction. It's not clear exactly what distinction he has, but maybe he has some distinction. But here it seems to be explicitly some Mishnah, which argues with him. So the Ritbaz says, I think it's Ritbaz, somebody says that Rabbi Yochanan holds that there's a difference between Tiruf and Ariga. Or it's just got mixed in together, then the wool of the Bukhar is Batal Barov. And the Mishnah is talking about a case where you wove in specifically wool of a Bukhar. So there it's not Batal Barov, it's not negated. But the Gemara obviously feels that it's a chiluk, but it's not mechalik. That's not a distinction. And therefore, if the case where you wove it in is also so to the case where you mixed it in is also as well. Okay?
And what does this Mishnah have to do with what we've been talking about?
It just shows where Rabbi Yochanan and Mishnah come into conflict. We don't pass like Rabbi Yochanan.
Oh, okay.
That's all we're showing. So to where we have this price here where it says that if you said Matana to one, Yerusha to the other, so the Matana Lashon spreads. So that's against Rabbi Yochanan who said the Matana and Yerusha Lashon do not spread. Each one is in its own sphere, and therefore the Yerusha language does not work. So we see we don't pass like Rabbi Yochanan when a Mishnah goes against it.
And there are no cases when Rabbi Yochanan and the Mishnah disagree and you pass like Rabbi Yochanan?
No. It seems not that way. It seems not. Chodamasisa pli Rabbi Yochanan. Now, and this also seems arguing Rabbi Yochanan. It says, "Kasa ben bitchila ben b'amtsa ben mesov l'lashon matana dvarav kayamin." Says, if you wrote the beginning of a document, the middle of the document, the end of the document, language of matana, if you just slipped it in somewhere, that suffices to work, right? It's clear like Rabbi Yochanan. Says the Gemara, no, it's different. Tam lezeb l'lashon matana lezeb l'lashon Yerusha. Where did Rabbi Yochanan say that it doesn't work when he wrote to one guy language of Matana, another guy language of Yerusha? But here, Kol Echav Echav B'Losh Matana, Kol Echav Echav B'Losh Yerusha, he would about where the entire document was written even either to one person or to everybody. And if it's not a language of Yerusha to one, a language of Matana to the other guy, but each guy had all the Lashonis of Yerusha Matana, that's how Rabbi Yochanan would reconcile. Okay? Says the Gemara, Rabbi Chagai boy, come Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Chagai asked from Yossi, getting back to the previous case, where he said Tnu Shekel, right? We said give a shekel, so we give a seller, right? If he didn't say again, and afterwards let other people get the remainder, so we give them a seller because that's considered to be what they need. So if he even said give a shekel, so if they need a seller, we authorize the seller, which is double the shekel, for their sustaining. So says Marvenu Kavlachrine, so somebody's going to lose.
Who's losing?
Now, going back, if there are other heirs, they're going to lose, right? Because the estate is being cut down. Amrlei, so he said, "Shein shemachim." There are no other heirs. There are no other brothers besides these brothers. They're the only heirs. So it says, "Ravenu chavlachi aviv." Well, maybe his father had other brothers, and if these brothers dropped dead, where would the estate go? To the father's brothers. So therefore, chavlachrine. Potentially, not to other brothers, because there are no other brothers, but to the uncles. Says my Rabbi Chinah. But Rabbi Hillel says, "No, rotsu, but takonos should be banov. Yosemi krovav." He's more concerned with his kids than other relatives. So therefore, his focus is not that other relatives should get anything, but rather his focus is on his own kids. And the truth is, the Gemara's question is very, very strange. Because Lamaisa, right now, the only heirs are these guys, right? It would take an act of God to kill these guys in order to leave it to other heirs. So I understand we never take that into account in halacha, that your estate might be potentially damaged for some other heirs down the road.
Right.
It's a funny question to answer. I don't fully understand it. Okay? New parak.
Yeah, and I've known the kids.
Yeah, right. Known the kids. But they say he likes his kids better anyway. That's what it says here. Okay. Okay. Says more further. Says the Mishnah further. New parak. Very famous parak. One of the most all parakim are famous, but this is one of the most famous parakim of Shas Hamadir. That's very important. Hamadir sishtomin lehenoslo. Somebody takes an oath that his wife should not derive any benefit from him. Now, this is not talking about relations, marital relations. We talked about that earlier in the morning. It's going to draw a compelling contrast. However, it's talking about he's not going to support her. So, okay, if it's up to 30 days, Yamila Parnas, he herself can't support her, but he sets up for her a third party to support her, who supports her, and then he pays back that third party. Yoytzim kind of, it's more than 30 days. Yoytzim thinks he should divorce her and gives her a ksuva. Because it's his fault, he has to give a ksuva. Right? You remember Yisrael, if it's by regular Yisrael, Chodesh El Chod Yikayim, if it's the first month he keeps her, and does it by a parnas, Shnaim, if it's 2 months, Yoytzim thinks he has to divorce her and give her the ksuva. By a Kohenes, since obviously once he divorces the Kohenes, he can't take her back. So therefore, by a Kohenes, Shnaim, he kind of keeps her for 2 months, and Shlosha, in the third month, Yotzi divorces her, retakes her, and gives her ksuv at that point. Okay? Says more. I'm giving love enough. Tom and Tim, learn it over there.
You can't, poor woman, she can't marry another Kohen. So you can't say this is a Mekachtos and annul the marriage?
No, why would it be Mekachtos? It came and it happened after the marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a Mekachtos. Mekachtos only said which is present being in the marriage. That will be the topic later in the parak. But this is not a Mekachtos. Okay? Timothy, you learned over there. We learned previously in the fifth parak, if somebody takes a note that his daughter, he's not going to have relations with his wife, it's 1 or 2 weeks. Here it's 1 or 2 months. What's the difference? So it says, Tamon ben Medir Migufa, there you're preventing her access to your body, that's 1 or 2 weeks. Ramachim ben Medir, that's not because that's a personal affront. Here, where you're just causing her to refrain from your property, so then it's not as upsetting. Only after a month or two.
It's not the bottom line.
What? It's the opposite bottom line. That's right.
Apparently, Gashmus is even more important than the bottom line.
Yeah. Yeshadam, there you go. Yeshadam, neidishly froschavos. This is my understand. He owes her the money. How can he's obligated? How can he take an oath not to pay up his obligation? Right? If I owe you $1 million, I take an oath I'm not going to pay for you. I can't pay. I'm not supposed to pay for you. Of course, I'm supposed to pay for you. Rabbi Yitzchak said a fascinating answer. He came and trusted the Gasha. Every day he could say, "Well, tomorrow I'm going to divorce you. Veliti lo ksuva, I'm going to give you your ksuva, and they won't have my mezuzah. I don't have to give you your mezonos. So kamishem b'chov, it's as if I don't owe anything." It's a fascinating concept. In other words, owing something is if I have an outstanding obligation, but each day is a new obligation. Because each day I could divorce her any day, right? So why? So you can't say I'm under my obligation. I could divorce her. Isn't it a great answer?
But he has to pay the ksuv anyway.
True. So say, okay, the ksuv I'm obligated to you, but not mizonos. Right, because I can divorce you every day, so therefore each day he
under. He's not, so he should retroactively pay the day before his mizonos.
You're saying good. We'll get there. Says the Gemara, okay, so fine, let her wait till tomorrow. Being girish, if he divorces her, she'll get a ksuva. Being lavin, if not. Yalula Mizono, so now he didn't divorce her, he's gotta pay her for it, right? That's really your question, right? So say if he divorced her, so he has to give his suvas to no Mizonos, but now at least on the day before when he didn't give Mizonos, she's mukhri to give Mizonos, right? Because he didn't divorce her yet. So says Gemara, a very interesting answer. Command Amar A Mizonos Ishim Dvar Torah. It's great like the people chose Mizonos Ish is not the Raisa. If Mizonos Ish is the Raisa, you can't take a netter to undermine it. And if you owe a person money, the rice, you can't take a netter to undermine it. But here, the owing of mizonos is only the rabbana. So therefore, a netter can undermine it. It's not a bona fide obligation. It's one the rabbi has placed upon you. You can hunt and they take a netter and undermine it. Okay? So the netter takes effect. Okay? Because other time, like it's learned, ain't based in post-conglishim mizonos mitvei shvius. Basin does not stay, if a man's got a money which he made off of selling Shemitah fruit. So Allah is not allowed to do, you're not allowed to make money or pay back your loans, which is a form of making money with Shemitah fruit. So if you hold that, if you hold that Mizonos of Daraisa, so now it's not an obligation which you must meet. So you could be able to pay with Shemitah fruit. But you hold that Mizonos is the Darabanan, so it's an obligation which you must meet. So obligation you must meet. So then, the only way it's going to work, it's not going to work. You're not going to be able to pay it up with Shemitah fruit. It's a very interesting distinction. Rogachev actually explains it elsewhere. He says that a Doraisa obligation is a mitzvah. That's not called a chov. A Drabon obligation is a chov. You have to listen to what the rabbis told you to do, right? You're obligated to do what the rabbis told you to do. It's not a mitzvah that you perform. It's an obligation you must fulfill. You know, we use language being yoytze your chiyuv. What does that mean? Fulfilling your obligation. So therefore, if mizonos is the raisa, it's not a chov upon you, which you're paying up with shemitah fruit, which is forbidden. You're fulfilling the mitzvah of supporting your wife. But it's only rabbanan placed upon you, so then rabbanan can't really make mitzvahs. What they can do is say, you owe us money, hefker based in hefker, right? Use your money for the purpose which we give you, right? Which we told you to use it for. So, but then you're fulfilling your obligation, right? Fulfilling an obligation, not fulfilling a mitzvah. Fulfilling an obligation, so you're being parea chov. You're redeeming your debt. That you now do a shemitah fruit.
So you're fulfilling a mitzvah, if it's mi deraisa, with an avera. You're not supposed to use the shemitah fruit.
No, but the Torah stipulates on a Daraisa level, everything is on a par. But the Torah said, live your life, a mitzvah life during Shemitah. So therefore, if the Torah says there's a mitzvah to be made in your wife, give him his own, during Shemitah, of course, so then even during you can use Shemitah fruit for the obligation. But if the Torah didn't say it, the rabbis imposed it, that's superimposed. That means Shemitah.
That I understand.
Right.
That part I understand. Just about the Shemitah, using the Shemitah for doing a mitzvah.
That would be okay.
That's okay.
Because the Torah said keep mitzvahs during Shemitah.
Okay.
But the rabbinic mitzvah doesn't have that same level of the okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, what if you sold the Shemitah food and used the money to support your wife?
Mm-hmm.
That you can't do.
The Kedusha transfers to the money. Okay, that's what we're saying. That we say midmei shvius, even from the money of shvius, it says here. So any basic place for lishim is those basic can't stipulate obligations. Lishim is those midmei shvius, but when she's at home, avnizoynis yaitel baal b'shvius. Of course, she can eat the food with him in the house. That's not considered to be fulfilling an obligation which the rabbis placed upon him. They're just eating together, or just like I can invite anybody else into my house to eat. But to make it a formal obligation which he must meet because he's away from home or because he's being recalcitrant or whatever, that basically can't make him do from Shemitah fruits. Okay? So that's more a very interesting question, a really interesting question. Let's say a guy worked in your house, he fixed your plumbing. He didn't own a value of a, he didn't make a value of a pruta. So what do? He can't pay money. How do you pay him? So it's a famous Gemara. The Gemara says that Eov, when he used to have a worker, when he used to work with less than a pruta, he used to buy a loaf of bread for a pruta, and whatever amount of a pruta he worked, he used to cut the bread to that amount and give him that piece of bread. So that you'd be allowed to do with Shemitah fruit, because you're not fulfilling an obligation. Because an obligation only begins at what level? Over a pruta, right. You're not obligated for less than a pruta. So therefore, if it's not obligated for less than a pruta, of course, you can pay anyway. But theoretically, we say less than sharp pruta is really nimchal. It doesn't count. So, so it's like an obligation to a worker who hasn't worked the sharp pruta, that you're not fulfilling an obligation. And the truth is there would be some logic to that. Because it's not a monetary obligation, it's a rabbinic command, right? So therefore, it shouldn't be measured by its monetary component. It should be measured by its necessity as part and parcel of the Jewish religion. And therefore, maybe we could say, could make the argument, that you could use Shemitah fruit for that purpose. Okay? It's a cute svara. So Zemara doesn't really answer. Zemara says, Adamaras teaches us, since they didn't say such a thing, Sheino Sima So Kapol Sheino Shava Pruta. They didn't make the Mizono Saisha like a worker who worked less than a Pruta. Because obviously they didn't permit using Shemitah fruit for that purpose. Okay, so now that's Zemara. Fine. Okay, so if that's the case, we know that the reason why it doesn't, why his nether takes effect is because it's only in his going opinion, and Mizonis is only Durabonat. But Viamid Paranus, let him make a trustee to feed her. So he's not feeding her directly, the trustee is feeding her. Kadar, like we have in such a high principle. Ish plenty million remaining on off. I said I refuse to provide benefit for Rat Yanko. Then at the MIS, but I don't know what to do because he has nothing to eat. Never. I hate his guts. I don't want to feed I forbade all benefit from my property on him. But he has to eat. Right? Typical Jewish concern, right? Ma'asa Yamid Parnas. So he's allowed to put up a trustee who's going to feed the guy, and he'll make the trustee, he'll reimburse the trustee afterwards. That's permission. Yamid Parnas. So,
but indirectly, he's still giving an odd to that person.
That's okay. That's okay. That doesn't matter. That's okay. As long as the trustee provides an odd before he pays him. Because he's not providing the no, he's facilitating it, but yeah, that's not the same thing as providing. It's like Grumman ben Izakin. He's facilitating, but he's not providing. And this there is providing, not facilitating. Okay? So Lupo. Well, so
what? But he's a shaliach. So isn't a shaliach more than...
It's not a shaliach. He goes to the trustee and he says, if you do this, you won't lose. Not a shaliach. Well, it's a loophole. So as Mara, well, that may be by there, but Rishus Biara Ishul Amar, a woman can say, if she lispanes me'acher, alami bali. It's not a marriage anymore, right? She wants to get a pronounce from her husband directly. Says Mara, wait a minute, did we learn there is precedent for such a thing? In the case of Amashas Ishlade Shlish, you leave your wife and you support her by a trustee. Says more different. Kamish kibula, kamish lo kibula. Depends if she accepted upon herself or didn't accept upon herself. If she doesn't agreeably, that can work out. But if she doesn't agree, she has the right to protest. Says the Gemara, ibish lo kibula. Wait a minute. If she doesn't agree, if it's not agreeable, I feel your melgos lo yamid. So how come our Mishnah says 30 days, even one day? If she doesn't agree, she should protest immediately, and the 30 days shouldn't work. True. Theoretically, the first day she could demand divorce. But we wait for 30 days, maybe you'll find some way, some opening by which you can be matir's neder. Shmuel Amar, you know what? B'medir shloshim yom. This is our mission is talking about where he takes an oath not to bride or any benefit for 30 days. Then we say that you give her up to 30 days. I'm the dear Lolan, but if she, he took an oath not to provide a benefit ever, miyad yotzi v'yitayim k'suva. Then, in fact, right away, talk has to divorce her. She can demand divorce immediately on the spot. No cooling off period. Immediately. Rabbi Zion and Rabbi B'Shem Rav said, no, I feel him in the dear Lolan, even if he took an oath that it should be forever, we ask him for a cooling off period of 30 days. Shemayim tzapas nidro. Maybe he'll find an opening out of his nether. Is tani tani shloshim yom. There's some people who learn our Mishnah. The language was 30 days. Is tani tani ad shloshim yom. And some language said language is up to 30 days. Mandamar you said shloshim 30, right? Misayel the covenant changes. It says should be misayel shmuel. That's like Shmuel said. There are Mishnah's talking about case. He took an oath for 30 days, but if he took an oath forever. So then immediately he's got to divorce her because she has the right to demand a divorce. I don't want to be live with this such a jerk, right? Umanamar ad shloshim, he says that our Mishnah's language is ad shloshim. So that's misayeya, that's like, it should be again switching the girsa. Misayeya rav, that should be, that's like rav, who said that even by where he took an oath forever, we ask for a cooling off period of up to 30 days to see if whether they can find a Pesach in the meantime. Okay, so depending on which way you hold, like Rabbi Shmuel, you have a different gear than our Mishnah, whether it's Shloshim, which means adopting a Mishnah is a netter of 30 days, but a netter of forever, the divorce is immediate, or whether it's at Shloshim, which means that the netter is a forever netter, but there's a cooling off period of up to 30 days to see if he can find a way out of it. Okay, we'll have to stop here.
We're on a roll,
but I didn't prepare anymore. I didn't prepare anymore. I've learned from experience in Yerushalmi. Whenever I try stuff I didn't prepare, I can't wing it. Unlike the Bavli, which may be wung, Yerushalmi is such a difficult thing.